Hey, John, good morning. How are you, man?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Good. Help us out here. We were just talking about Kyler Murray, okay? And he's going to enter the NFL draft. We know that he's a first-round pick, Oakland Athletics, Major League Baseball. Can you help us as to why Kyler Murray would play in the NFL over Major League Baseball? What do you make of that?
It's simple. He loves football more than he loves baseball. And it was very clear when someone hands him, an organization hands him $5 million, and he still says, hold on a second. I still want to live out my football dream. Then they say, okay, sure, not thinking anything of it. Goes, lives out his football dream at Oklahoma. Just so happens he's one of the best quarterbacks, not the best quarterback in college football last year. And then he says, hold on, guys. I see the $5 million, but I still want to live out my football dream. So if I'm a GM and I'm trying to get a sense of Kyler Murray's character, that's all it says right there. Money clearly is not an object. Yeah, he wants to play football. Yeah, he loves it.
That's a good point. GMs probably love that. We're like, you know what? We're going to take this kid in the first round, and he loves football.
Yep.
And the reason 100%. And JV, the reason why he ended up starting to do the football thing, obviously, was because of his father, right? His father was a one-time quarterback as well at the University of Oklahoma, so he basically wanted to transfer over there and grant that father's wish of playing for the University of Oklahoma for that 1 year. But as the year went on, I know in ESPN Studios, the conversation must have been, I can't get over how good this guy is, and the more and more we see of him, it's very Mahomes-esque at the collegiate level.
Yeah, we watched, and frankly, by the end of the year, I was saying that I hope he gives me just 8 games in the NFL, just so I can see how he would do. And I think he will perform well, obviously not at the insane level that he did it at Oklahoma, but I think that he'll do a very, very good job if they put him into, they as in any team, puts Kyler Murray into a system similar to Russell Wilson, where you have a very, very strong back, a Marshawn Lynch-type back. You can do zone reads, and then you keep him with that distance between the rushers for at least 2 or 3 seconds, and then give him the opportunity to kind of move around and wiggle around in the pocket. Not having him under center would do him a benefit. He'd be able to see the field better. So I would love to see just 8 games of someone, some team, putting him in the right system.
And a guy that you played with, Drew Brees, does he resemble any of that, like the younger Drew Brees that was a little bit more mobile and able to move around in that pocket?
So in the mobility sense, he's more mobile. I see Drew Brees as a different type of quarterback because Drew Brees was, still is, throwing to spots on the field. When I watch Kyler Murray, he still waits a little bit for the players, the routes to develop and get open. So Drew Brees could have his back to the defense and play action and wouldn't skip a beat. Drew Brees would like to slide up into the pocket and still make his throws, doesn't skip a beat. Kyler Murray, unless it's, you know, clear pocket and he steps up, but I usually see him wanting to go up and out quickly before just staying up, as in up and out in the pocket, yeah, before he just stays into the pocket making his throws. He likes to get up and out so he can see again and then throw the ball.
We got John Vilma here with us. Let's talk about the Canes for a second here. The Canes are obviously interested in Jalen Hurts. He's going to transfer. Be honest with me here, John. What would Jalen Hurts see in the Miami Hurricanes right now and say, you know what, that's where I want to go?
Are you saying what would make him want to come, or what effect would he have if he did come?
Yeah. Why would UM be the most appealing option to him?
Wow, that's a good question. To be frank, there's not much to sell right now. We don't really know for certain the offensive coordinator. There's whispers and rumors. The offensive line needs some work, so the thing I can see is a very, very good opportunity to be slid in as one of the top quarterbacks coming out from the ACC. When you look at who's available in the ACC as quarterback, so if he wants that type of notoriety to start the season, sure, come down to Miami. Clearly, it's an open quarterback situation, and if he plays as well as he played for the second half of Georgia, it'll be his starting job. Outside of that, to be very frank, there's not much to sell about the University of Miami right now.
Yeah. How do you think Mark Richt's going to be remembered? Like, if 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, and we think back of Mark Richt's time here at Miami, like, how do you think we're going to think of him?
The guy that got us money for a facility. That's the way I look at it.
You know, we'll look back at Mark Richt as really a love-hate relationship. We love that he was able, as Romberg said, to bring some fire and relevance back to the university. The first year was so-so. We get the indoor facility started and breaking ground, and that was great. The second year, he does a tremendous job. And so this year, obviously, it didn't go as planned. So, you know, the way it ended is what's going to stick in people's minds for, you know, next season or two. But then when you think back on the overall, I think it'll be something where it's a situation of I love what he did with the program the first couple years. I love that he got Miami back on the map and got us at least jump-started again to get back to relevance. Hated the way it ended. Hated that, you know, clearly it was a coach who was tired, a coach that looked tired, looked burnt out, and
you're right. He looked tired, right?
He sounded tired. He looked tired. He looked lethargic.
Yeah.
He looked lethargic, and it really reared its ugly head when Manny Diaz left for Temple, and it was a very, very simple coaching change as far as making two D coordinators, promoting them to two position coaches and promoting them to D coordinators. And, you know, in my head, I'm saying, well, this is a premier job for any coach that knows how to recruit the South Florida area. And if you know how to recruit the South Florida area, you would love, absolutely love to come down to Miami, because Miami is the only school, Power 5 school, that you can just drive an hour away and the talent is right there for you, as opposed to having to fly down like the Jimbo Fishers of the world and the Nick Sabans of the world. So for him to have not opened up that coaching position to some interviews, and look, you can hire within all you want to, I'm just talking about the process and the process that Mark Richt went through to hire his co-D coordinators at the end of the season, just kind of told me that he doesn't have that fire left.
And just to elaborate on, obviously, promoting within, we got Manny Diaz as our guy, and I know he was probably one of the names that were slid across on a piece of paper on the table and trying to find out, you know, the buyout and that whole situation. Are you able to elaborate or talk about some of the other candidates that you might have been high on or some maybe that we might not have known about?
Well, no, I'm not allowed to elaborate on it. Two, even if I were, I wouldn't, because we have Manny Diaz. And I like Manny Diaz. I believe most people like Manny Diaz's energy that he brought to the program as D coordinator the last three seasons. What impressed me the most was seeing the consistency in the defense, even when Miami was on a four-game losing streak. So we're losing games, and clearly we're losing games because the offense is atrocious.
Yep.
Yet the defense is still going out there playing as hard as they can, and, you know, until they're kids. So until they just get fed up with it and then they give up a big play or two or something happens. But, you know, to have the players still playing hard for you, even when it is bleak, there's just no light at the end of the tunnel. That said a lot about him as a coach.
So who said Manny Diaz? As in, like, you probably guys threw around maybe four or five different options, then all of a sudden somebody came up and said, well, how much would it take to get Manny back?
Well, it was really about Manny leaving. You're saying, damn, Manny's leaving. Like, damn, you know, we have one of our best coaches leaving. And, of course, the good coaches, they get poached, and we understand that. But then it's like, all right, well, what now? You know, and that goes back to a Mark Richt seeming, looking, feeling, speaking, just burnt, spent, tired. And we're saying, well, where are we going to go now to get the spark or continue the spark? Because when Mark Richt first started, we had that spark. We had the energy, brought in Paradise Camp. That was great. you know, the recruits are coming in. Everyone loved it. We go on a 10-game winning streak. That was awesome. So how to continue that spurt and just take it to the next level without burning out.
We got John Vilma here with us. Let me get to a couple of NFL things here while we got you, John. You know, New Orleans is playing this weekend. I think it's the best home field advantage that's left. Maybe best home field advantage, period, in the NFL. But as far as the teams that are left in the playoffs, I think it's the best home field advantage. Can you echo that a little bit? I mean, obviously, you spent most of your career there. Can you tell us a little bit about New Orleans' home playoff games?
It is by far the loudest stadium in the NFL. It was, I remember playing my years there, and then in the playoffs, when a team would come in, or a big game, Sunday night game, Monday night game, but I particularly remember the playoffs where before the game, that week of practice, I had to create hand signals and literally speak to my defense in sign language because I could not hear anything anybody was saying. You could have been 6 inches from me, right in my face, screaming at the top of your lungs and could not hear Jack. You know what I mean? So that was the best home field advantage that we had because I was like, if I can't hear anything and my defense can't hear anything, I know that the offense can't hear anything, and it makes it so hard to communicate. So above anything else, athleticism, play calling, players, if you can't communicate on offense, you have no chance.
Do you remember?
Absolutely zero chance.
Do you remember instances, John, where you're there on defense and you're looking at the offense in this playoff game and you could see that, whoa, those guys are shook. It is so loud.
Oh, yeah. I saw that versus Arizona. I saw it when we had Detroit come in for a home game for the playoff. I saw Kurt Warner's eyes, second quarter, just bug eye, could not believe how loud it was. And, at first, you try to go through it in the first, second series, and you're like, okay, it's loud, I can't hear. And then you can see the coaches on the sideline trying to make the adjustments with the receivers and the quarterbacks and the running backs because, again, they got to communicate. And then by the second quarter, it's still just bearing down on you. And Kurt Warner's eyes were just like a deer in the headlights, could not believe that it was like this for the whole game, like literally the whole game. We blew them out. No chance. They had no chance. We blew them out.
Yeah, I could second really that, cool. Man. You guys, especially on Monday night games when we would go over there from Atlanta.
Remember those Atlanta Monday night
I'm
games?
I'm telling you, even that song, when that song comes on, and people are pissed drunk from drinking and bourbon like all afternoon, and then all of a sudden they just roll into that stadium, and then this was just that post-Hurricane Katrina stuff, so it was electric in that place. And then once that song comes on, that boom, 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 and then the crowd is going nuts, man.
are you into the Saints still? Like, are you watching this weekend? You're pulling hard for them?
Oh yeah, I'm going to the game. I'm actually leaving today for the weekend. I'm going to the game. Some of my former teammates, friends/teammates, will all meet up. And Sean does a great job of bringing the guys back. Not just the guys, the former coaches are coming back. I mean, we had such a great time. It is the equivalent of my relationship with Miami, with my teammates, former teammates/friends at Miami. I mean, it is awesome. Anytime I get a chance to support the Saints, I do.
Yeah, but it also don't hurt the fact that you're in, like, the Ring of Honor there, too, right? Isn't that the case over there?
Stop, Romberg. That's not why I'm going back, man.
John, do you care about the Jets at all, or are you just like, screw them, man? I'm Saints.
You know, I do wish success for the Jets. Since they drafted me, I got Rookie of the Year over there. I had great years. The team didn't have great years. We made the playoffs twice, but we didn't do anything of significance. But I had a lot of fun. And, you know, it's a situation where I gave 110% everything I had to football in the organization when I was there. And when I left, I didn't have any resentment. I wasn't bitter about leaving. I left knowing that I gave everything I had.
Are you talking tax purpose wise, or are you just talking about like you physically?
No, I'm talking about me. Wait. Say that one more time, Robert.
Yeah, I'm talking about taxes wise. You gave everything you had, or are you talking about physically?
Yeah, that New York State tax.
Damn,
come
that
on
tax
now.
Is
well,
nasty.
Tax, Taxes wise, I gave double because I had to give to New York and New Jersey, so we won't even go there. So that was that was 200% I gave over there for taxes, and then physically I gave everything I had as well. And you realize it when my old coaches. I'm still in touch with my D coordinator at the time, Bob Sutton. He's actually with the Kansas City Chiefs right now, defensive coordinator. I still keep in touch with my GM at the time, Terry Bradway, Mike Tannenbaum. So that when you still have those relationships with the organization, that lets you know that they really appreciated your time there. So I appreciated my time. I enjoyed it. I wish them success, but hey, it is what it is.
Good job as always, John. We appreciate you joining us, man.
Thanks, guys. Much appreciated.
All right, take it easy.